Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And with your responses on DW Africa, I am Abubakar Jalo.
Coming up on the program, Rwandans brace for tomorrow's election to elect a new president. But one candidate stands out compared to the other competitors.
I believe the incumbent president, Paul Kagame, is going to win. It has been evident on his rallies. He has been having crowds, very big crowds, compared to his opponent.
Still on elections, former Ghanaian president John Dramani Mahama has urged Kenyans to ensure that next week's presidential election is peaceful.
This is a high-stakes election. It's a critical election. I call it a watershed. It is the election that is going to see the maturity of Kenyan democracy.
And with all of your responses, plus a very interesting topic on an African python coming up shortly.
I can't wait for that, Abu. I can't wait for that. But before all that, here's a chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Islamist militants have released a South African hostage held in Mali since 2011. South Africa's foreign minister announced Stephen McGowan's release on Thursday, saying that he has no major injuries and that no ransom was paid for his release. McGowan was the last of three friends to be released by an al-Qaeda militant group, which has been responsible for dozens of kidnappings of Westerners and for attacks on tourist locations in West and North Africa. Rwandans abroad have started voting in the country's presidential election one day before polls open in the East African country. The country's electoral commission says they're expecting some 44,000 people to vote overseas, while nearly 7 million registered voters are expected to go to the polls on Friday. 59-year-old President Paul Kagame won the election in 2010 with more than 90% of the vote and has been ruling the nation after rebels ended a 1994 genocide. Following a meeting with South Sudanese President Salva Kiir, the United Nations expressed concern that ceasefire efforts in South Sudan are not holding. South Sudan's Minister of Cabinet Affairs, however, has expressed hope, saying continued relations with the UN and efforts by Kiir would eventually bring peace.
We believe the relationship that we are developing will truly bring peace to the Republic of South Sudan. In particular, the president has sent messages on what he would like the UN to do. One key was that he would like the United Nations to reach out to those rebels who are holding citizens hostages and to engage them and to bring them to the table to speak to one another in order to bring peace.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. U.S. Donald Trump on Thursday has backed an immigration overhaul proposal known as RAISE, which if passed would introduce a points-based system to cut immigration to the U.S. by half in the next 10 years. Opponents have criticized the plan, calling it radical and saying it would devastate the economy. Trump, however, has praised the legislation, calling it a significant merit-based immigration system that would protect U.S. workers.
It's great to be here today to unveil legislation that would represent the most significant reform to our immigration system in a half a century.
The UN reported that Islamic State militants have been committing genocide against Yazidi minorities in Iraq and Syria for the past 3 years. In a report, the UN says that genocide is ongoing and remains largely unaddressed, and that thousands of Yazidi men and boys remain missing, and over 3,000 women and girls have been subjected to horrific violence, rape, and daily beatings. And now in sports, Spain's top football league has held up the transfer of Barcelona star Neymar to Paris Saint-Germain. La Liga's president said it would not accept his buyout clause of 222 million euros under World Football Financial Fair Play rules. La Liga's move is being reviewed, with details expected shortly. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jalo.
Rwandans will tomorrow head to the polls to elect a new president to lead the country for the next 5 years. Incumbent President Paul Kagame is widely expected to win with a landslide victory. And unlike their regional neighbors in Kenya, whose presidential campaigns have been marred by counter-accusations of sabotage and possible fraud, in Rwanda, the scene is a total contrast. This report by Nasra Bishumba in Kigali is now presented by Susan Holton.
Kigali residents were woken up as early as 4 a.m. on Wednesday by loudspeakers announcing the venue of incumbent President Paul Kagame's last presidential campaign. And in the space of just 2 hours, thousands of Kagame's supporters had filled almost the entire city. They sang and cheered loudly as they were ferried by buses to the venue. During the entire campaign period, the city has been festooned with flags of the ruling party RPF, overshadowing the other two contenders, the Democratic Green Party's Frank Habineza and little-known independent candidate Philippe Maimana. Both stand no chance in a contest that has already been declared a formality by Kagame himself. Former Kenyan Vice President Moody Awori, who is leading the East African Community Observer Mission in Rwanda, spoke about the general mood in the country.
I'm really amazed that in quite a number of regions, even where we are here, we would be hearing noise around. I haven't seen that, I have not heard that. In fact, sometimes it's difficult to know that election campaign is going on. To me, that is very big. The fact that we do not expect anything unusual would not stop us from coming to observe.
Paul Mugenzi, despite being a first-time voter, is not very enthusiastic about the whole election.
Well, I think it's boring. We know who is going to win. I believe the incumbent president, Paul Kagame, is going to win. It has been evident on his rallies.
Over the years, the ruling party has generated considerable support across the country because of its extensive socio-economic development policies. And this is why voters like Doreen Mwali think Kagame should remain president.
I am going to vote for Kagame because of all our achievements. Even if I am ill or I am on a droop, I will go and vote for him. Who knew that I would also be able to go out here and make money? He empowered us. He has developed our country. We have security, peace, health insurance, proper roads, and many other things.
Human rights organizations have accused Kagame's regime of using coercive tactics to guarantee its electoral success during his 17-year rule. At least 6.8 million Rwandans will take part in the poll. A quarter of them will be first-time voters, born after the 1994 genocide, and whose vote will be enough to secure a landslide victory for Paul Kagame.
That report was by Nasra Bishumba in Kigali.
And Isaac, as you introduced this report, you compared the electoral process as well in Kenya, where things are really quite tense compared to Rwanda, which is quite calm. A response here from Eric in Kenya says, in Rwanda, there is no stiff competition on the leadership. There are almost 8 competitors in Kenya compared to Rwanda.
So that has only 3. And Zil Anurukemu from Nigeria says, I think Paul Kagame should step aside for fresh ideas. He has ruled Rwanda since 1994.
Daniel from Ghana says, it's good. The political tension is very calm and cool in the regions of Rwanda. As the saying goes, experience is the best teacher. Rwanda's experienced a brutal genocide. That's why they learned from this. That's basically what Daniel is trying to say.
Thanks indeed, Abubakar Jalo. Now, without delay, let's cross over to Kenya, where in just 5 days' time, it will be their turn to elect a new president as well. Unlike Rwanda, just like my colleague Abubakar Jalo has just mentioned, the Kenyan election is highly contested and there's no clear sign who will win it between incumbent president Uhuru Kenyatta and the leader of the opposition, Raila Odinga. And this is one reason observation missions have been streaming into the country to assess the situation ahead of the election. The latest is the Commonwealth Observation Team led by former Ghanaian president John Dramani Mahama. From Nairobi, Andrew Asike sent this report.
Hate speech and ethnic tension have characterized the campaigns in the build-up to the polls. However, Head of Commonwealth Observer Mission in Kenya, John Mahama, says the country has a duty as an economic hub in the East African region of setting a good example.
This is a high-stakes election. It's a critical election. I call it a watershed. It is the election that is going to see the maturity of Kenyan democracy. It will establish Kenya as one of the leading democracies on this continent.
Mahama condemned the recent killing of top Kenya's electoral body, Chris Msando, saying the perpetrators must be brought to book.
We will join with all those calling for a full, rigorous and thorough investigation to find out who is responsible and why this unfortunate incident took place.
The Commonwealth team arrived in the wake of an Al-Shabaab attack in Mandera that left one dead and several injured. Inspector General of Police Joseph Boynet sought to reassure Kenyans of ample security during the election period.
In supporting IBC to fulfill its mandate, we will, as we have said severally, do so in strict conformity with the law. We shall, and we have been, and even in the remaining days and thereafter, be totally nonpartisan, and we'll be responsive to the needs of our people.
That report was by Andrew Wasike.
And on our Facebook page, DW Africa, we've been asking, do you think that the presidential elections in Kenya is a test on the country's security situation? Ismail from Nigeria said, yes, it is. Daniel from Ghana says, I wonder what exactly is on the African soil when it comes to politics, that we see it as do or die. Posterity, we judge African politicians. Isaac Godwin from Liberia says, I think it's a test that has been failed by Kenyan political system. It has just shown how united they can be, killing the head of the ICT for electoral board, that is the Christopher Msando.
Many thanks indeed, Abu. Keep those comments flowing, and he will read them, and that's why he's here anyway. And to the US, where President Donald Trump has succumbed to pressure from Congress and grudgingly signed off on fresh sanctions against Moscow for its alleged meddling in the 2016 elections. Trump signed the bill into law after Congress passed it with bipartisan support last week. He says it limits his negotiating power with Moscow. DW's Nicholas Connolly in Moscow has been telling our colleague in Berlin, Amrita Chima, the impact of the latest sanctions against Russia and European businesses. Take a listen.
There's been a lot of anger in Brussels. We've heard particularly from European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, who has seemed to be livid about this American stance to having gone at it alone without consulting the Europeans. We've heard from the German foreign minister, from the Austrian chancellor, who are all very angry at this attempt by the Americans to hit European business in an attempt to weaken Russia. Having said that, we don't actually know how this is going to play out. These sanctions give the president a lot of options in terms of sanctioning European business, but they don't force him to. It's not as if these European companies involved in energy projects with Russia are now suddenly being kicked out of the US, as it were. So given that he signed these sanctions holding his nose, as it seemed, I think it's going to take a little while for us to really feel the impact of how far they're going to go and how much damage they're willing to inflict on European business.
The Prime Minister of Russia, Medvedev, says these measures amount to a trade war. Now, oil and gas are Moscow's biggest weapons in terms of fighting sanctions. What are the implications for the EU, though?
This is a trade war between the US and Russia, not involving the Europeans. And the volume of trade between the US and Russia is pretty small. It's only about a tenth of the trade the Russians do with the EU. So I don't think we're going to see any negative impact on energy supplies, for instance, from Russia to the EU.
That was our correspondent in Moscow, Nicholas Connolly.
And as usual, we've been monitoring your comments there to the elections in Rwanda tomorrow and also the upcoming one in Kenya. Joseph from Kiambu, Kenya says, Kenyan polls are mostly heated up, unlike Rwanda, since in Kenya, two major contenders are both political heavyweights with support from major communities, which are bitter political rivals.
Amal Adam from Ghana says, Africa getting to groove back. The East Africans should learn from West African. Together we build a strong continent. Much love to all Africans, he says.
And to Rwanda, Mumi Razak from Ghana says, the presidential elections in Rwanda is just a mere formality. The winner is already known.
And again, our usual contributor from Liberia, Godwin, says, if I was a Rwandan, my vote would go to Paul Kagame because of his tenure, sustainable development and growth of the Rwandan economy.
Two contrasting comments there.
Sure. sure indeed. Keep them flowing, and we'll always read them live here on air on Africa Link. And just in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And hosting your responses, I am Abubakar Jalo.
Yes, we will be hearing how South Africans with dreadlocks are living in fear because of a boom in the trade of dreadlocks. This one was not so lucky. Take a listen.
Suddenly, he pulled out a knife and said that I shouldn't make a sound. I thought that he wanted to steal my smartphone, but then he took out a pair of scissors and cut my dreadlocks off.
A response from Camp George said, it's a craving taken too far. I will have more of those. And they're also monitoring your responses to our story on Rwanda and Kenya.
But first, before all that, to Nigeria, where heads of immigration services from member countries of the Economic Commission for East African State, ECOWAS, are meeting to review the irregularities in the system as well as improve data sharing, all with the name of curbing migration. The meeting also scrutinized security challenges in ECOWAS countries and the rights of residents, among other things. Wise Idris in Abuja was at the venue and sent this report.
Harrowing stories of death, starvation and abuse at the hands of people smugglers have been making headlines as migrants struggle to make their way to Europe. The mass movement is unlikely to decrease as conflict rages across border and within states. Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is calling for intelligence sharing among West African countries as a way of checking the menace of migration. Insecurity and the quest for integration, which is a dilemma for most of the member states. Mohammed Babandede is the Nigerian Comptroller of Immigration.
For a long time, people move around. We believe in free movement, but we don't have concrete cooperation. If a person crossed national borders, our national borders, we can be able to pick upon and talk to our colleague. I said, look, there's something happening, there's something coming. So this is going to be practical operational cooperation with our colleagues. And as you are aware, there is free movement, but it's also coupled with the security challenges. We should be able to handle such issues by sharing intelligence and information among one another.
But how bad is the situation in some of the West African countries as terrorism, insecurity and migration now challenges integration under ECOWAS within the region? I posed this question to the Commissioner of Liberia's Immigration, Lamel Reeves.
Well, it is similar to all the issues that all West ECOWAS countries encounter. We have, while we try to mesh as possible to make the regular migration possible, there are a lot of irregular migration, and the porosity of our borders, a lot of people try to infiltrate without going to a recognized border point. These are some of the issues we can trash off, and the issue of information sharing. Transnational criminals, cross-border criminals, human trafficking issues, drugs, illegal transfer of arms across borders. These are all issues that terrorism, of course, is always a threat. So we almost work together.
Nigeria's Interior Minister, Abdulrahman Dembazao, say lack of effective border control is a major problem which should be tackled to cut the numbers of immigration.
Well, arms smuggling is a major challenge of cross-border criminal activities because, you know, our borders are porous, they are extensive. So one of the things we here we're looking at is effective use of technology because of the extensiveness and porousness of the borders and also the similarities among border communities. It's very difficult to man them physically. We cannot do this alone without collaborated efforts within the sub-region and also international organizations.
As the ECOWAS chiefs decided to use swipe cards towards improving intelligence sharing in tackling myriads of security and migration challenges, many hope the resolution will finally be put into action.
Wise Idris reporting from Abuja.
Uzon.
In South Africa, dreadlocks and rasta braids are popular ways to give your hair some added length and volume. The fashion is part of a booming trade, but the growing demand for lucrative locks has given rise to a new kind of crime, people being attacked and robbed off their hair, as Jana Genth found out. Samantha Ali presents the story.
A man with rasta braids stands in a courtyard in South Johannesburg. There's a chair next to him and he's set up a small table on the dusty ground. It's a makeshift stall to sell the dreadlocks he's got on display. He's selling them for between 300 and 600 rand, or 20 to 40 euros a piece, depending on the length. The hair isn't from his own head, though. He bought it.
The people who sell it say it's their own hair, and I believe them, because I can't check it.
It might sound innocent enough, but the reality is much more sinister. For the past few years, there have been an increasing number of reported hair robberies in South Africa. In the eastern port city of Durban, authorities have even issued warnings, advising people with rasta dreadlocks to avoid certain places. And for good reason, according to hairdresser Geraldine Kananga.
They target the hotspots like taxi rank and places that are busy, and they look at those very expensive-looking Brazilian and they snatch them. These weaves are very expensive. They range from 4,000 to 6,000. So if you lose it, it's very traumatic.
Up to 400 euros for one bunch of hair. That's not only a lot of money for a South African, but being accosted by a hair thief can also be a frightening experience because they're quite aggressive. Mabuseka can attest to that. She has short hair now because she's just been robbed. She says she was looking for an office in Johannesburg when a man came up to her and offered help. Then he lured her into a courtyard.
Suddenly, he pulled out a knife and said that I shouldn't make a sound. I thought that he wanted to steal my smartphone, but then he took out a pair of scissors and cut my dreadlocks off. I thought he would stab me if I screamed. He said I should keep quiet, so that's what I did.
For others, the experience of shedding their hair is voluntary. Ayanda sold hers to a hair salon, a practical decision, she says.
That was easy money. I made like 500 rand and the hair will grow back.
500 rand.
There isn't any official register or penalty for cases of hair theft. Apart from losing their expensive braids, the victims of such attacks are usually physically unharmed. But student Sandra Aguda sees things differently. Her braids were also cut off.
Your energy is in the hair. Who you are, it's part of that energy. So when they take your hair, they take that with them. There's a lot of trauma when you see people with knives. Obviously, you think they're coming for your bag, and then they grab your head. What do you think? You don't think they want your hair. You think he's going to slit your throat.
It sounds like a bizarre crime. But as long as the demand for hair remains, the attacks are set to continue. All different lengths and shades of dreadlocks can be seen in cities around South Africa. It's a popular look. But just how many of these braids are genuine and not from the black market is another question.
Jenna Genth on that report about dreadlocks. Now, Abu, tell me about the locks now.
The responses have been enormous, and yeah. I'm afraid we will not be able to get into all of them. Mm-hmm. I will read a few of this one. George says, it's a craving that's been taken too far. Charles Ongele from Uganda says, I can only say robbing people of their hair is a crazed world of simpletons.
And he says they're just redundant.
Yeah.
Ehosa Gooden from Liberia says, this is a recent trend that does not affect those with dread, but also with Brazilian, does not only affect those with dreadlocks, but also with Brazilian hairs. Sharp guys, drag the weave cap
from their ladies.
And escape. Oh, yeah. So it says life is funny, you know. Yeah. That's really rude, you know.
It is. And Kwashi Ochere Gaba from Ghana says, first of all, let me say this is so ridiculous. People being attacked and robbed because of their hair. People who do dreadlocks in Ghana are considered deviant in most of our societies, especially men who engage themselves in such practice. But with women, people take it cool with them.
Well, you've had it, our listeners and fans in South Africa or even Southern Africa. Watch your steps in case you have dreadlocks. We'll be back right after this.
Speaking out.
And for us picking out segment that focuses on human rights stories, we will head to South Sudan, where the UN Under Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, has been meeting President Salva Kiir to ensure that peace and stability returns to the country and put an end to the suffering of South Sudanese. Since the breakout of war in 2013, thousands of civilians have been killed, others raped, and more than 2 million people have been forced to leave their homes. While in South Sudan, Lacroix met with Salva Kiir and discussed all the security concerns in the country. This report by Wake Simon Wudu begins with him, that is Lacroix Jean-Pierre, speaking about the situation in the country. Take a listen.
In spite of the unilateral ceasefire that was decided by the authorities, fightings are continuing in different areas of the country, and it's certainly a matter of concern. It's a matter of concern because the continuation of fighting is certainly an obstacle to further progress in the political track. And it's also a matter of concern because these fightings obviously have a very serious impact on the population.
In a bid to help the civilians whose rights have been gravely infringed on by the warring parties, Lacroix said his organization will do all it can to help and save the situation.
The humanitarian situation, we are concerned because this is a situation that remains quite serious. The UN as a whole, UNMISS and the agencies and those who work with them are doing their best to help as many people as possible, and you know, doing it in very difficult situations, very, very difficult and sometimes dangerous conditions.
A report released by the Human Rights Watch this week said rights abuses in the country had exponentially increased, and calling for the sanctioning of 9 senior officials, including President Salva Kiir, for fueling the conflict. Agustino Ting Mayai, a researcher with the Soot Institute, a think tank organization in South Sudan, expressed much concerns on the grave abuses of human rights and called for a framework that will deal with those responsible for human rights abuses in South Sudan.
There should be establishment of the hybrid court system to collect data and keeps the data safe for future trials.
That report was compiled by Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
And I will take you to the responses on our two main topics today. That is the elections in Rwanda, which is tomorrow, and the upcoming elections in Kenya next week. Camp S.A. George says, yes, it's a huge test that we would define Kenya's ability to command its own position as an economic powerhouse in East Africa. The world is watching and hoping the Kenyan people remain united, notwithstanding whichever way the election goes.
And Usman Bin Affan, who is in Damaturu, northeastern Nigeria, says, I think only the outcome of the election can assure it.
Michael Bebu from Lagos, Nigeria, says, a murder of political figure or electoral officers in a country is a bad precedent. I know the Kenyan election would be successful. Life is a precious thing that should not be wasted for nothing. And now let's go to Rwanda. Charles Ongale from Kampala says, there is no prize for guessing that victory for Rwanda's strongman is a foregone conclusion. I would rather hope in an upset of incumbency in Kenya, not Rwanda.
And many people have been saying that, Abu, you know, that already, you know, the man said it himself, Kagame, that the results are already known, you know. You heard that in our report.
It's a general prediction.
Well, Didas from Rwanda says, we are eagerly waiting for tomorrow. It will be eventful day where we'll choose our president.
And John Tayushime from Kigali in Rwanda says, in Rwanda, elections are like a wedding party. There is no need to heat up our heads. In fact, it's a happy moment to show gratitude to our leader who took us from the darkest moment to the brightest one. We are buying new suits to go to vote tomorrow morning, and everyone will be smart for the voting party.
That's interesting. I've been seeing trending pictures. Many thanks for those comments on the elections, and we'll keep you posted.
And a question for you, Isaac.
Please
have
go
you
ahead.
Ever tried a snake?
What?
Have you ever tried a snake?
Not at all.
Come
on. Anything, you know, that is wild, I give it great respect. It's supposed to be let free, you know, do its thing.
Anyways, we have an interesting video on our page, DW Africa. Mm-hmm. Check it out. It's about the Africa rock python, which was caught in Cameroon, of course.
And if
A quick response there from Kwasi Ocheri. He says, what, a python? This is disgusting.
He says, even I would not even dare go near it. And I like, you know, Ehoza Godwin's comment. He says, I wouldn't buy or eat it for any reason.
Yeah, and Dide says, it's the first time I've seen such a massive snake in my life.
Yeah, and all I can say is that just go to our page, just like Abu said, DW Africa, and enjoy the video. On behalf of the entire production crew, I'm Isaac Mugabi.
And I am Abubakar Jalo.
Wishing all the best until tomorrow. Goodbye.